16th century theologian and philosopher. And Occam's razor is a principle he developed, which basically states that the most logical answer to any question is the most likely answer. For example, if Karen discovers one night that the container of her favorite Kemp's frozen yogurt twisted dough is empty on the kitchen counter, and she is presented with two possible explanations to what happened, which is the most logical. Is it A, that gray aliens from the planet Zardoz landed in our yard, they snuck into our house and they took the yogurt but left the container on the kitchen counter, and they took the yogurt back to their spaceship to analyze it to see what humans eat? Or is the most logical answer B, the guy with the gray hair on the couch next to her with the big chocolate circle around his mouth, he ate it? Which one is most logical? Occam's razor. I kept a diary when I was young, and this is my diary from 1974 when I was a senior in high school. This is my diary entry from April 27th, 1974. Saturday, April 27th, 1974, 45 years ago yesterday. I wrote, "I think maybe the church is haunted. Chair carts and whistles. Nan hears steps coming up the stairs. Lights come on at 12:30 in the morning and don't shut off, followed by three question marks." Let me tell you what happened on that day. Back in April 1974, I was 18, and I was the part-time janitor at the church where we lived in Eau Claire, where my father was pastor. And one Saturday afternoon on the 27th of April, my friend Nan Finner and I were at the church in the afternoon. We thought we were the only ones in the church. But some strange things started to happen. We heard a cart of chairs being pushed down the hallway someplace in the church. When we went to investigate, we didn't find anything. We heard someone whistling in the church, and again we went and investigated, and we couldn't find anyone. Nan heard steps coming up from the basement of the church. One more time we investigated, no one in the church. And that night at 12:30 in the morning, after I earlier in the day had gone over to the church, checked all the doors, locked all the doors, made sure all the doors were locked, I looked out, the parsonage was next to the church, and I saw that all the lights in the worship center were on. Well, my father and I, we went over to the church at 12:30 in the morning, and certainly all the doors were locked and all the lights were on, and we couldn't turn them off. So that's what happened on April 27th, 1974. So what's the most logical answer? Is it A, that the church was haunted by its old janitor? Or was it B, that there was someone in the church pushing carts and whistling and coming up the stairs, and Ann and I just didn't see them? What was more logical, that a ghost decided that he'd pull a fast one on us by turning on the lights in the middle of the night, or that we had some sort of electrical glitch that caused the lights to turn on? I don't think it was the ghost, just so you know. Things tend to have a logical answer. And with that in mind, with Occam's razor firmly established in us now, let me ask us, why do we Christians dare to believe and proclaim that Jesus of Nazareth was raised from the dead? Because let's face it, folks, resurrection doesn't make any sense. It flies in the face of science and biology and logic, because dead people don't come back to life. When you're dead, you're dead, and they certainly don't come back to life in some strange, new, unexplained way like we say Jesus of Nazareth came back. They stay dead. But we Christians, we have the unscientific audacity to proclaim what the Apostle Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 15:20, but in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead. And we need to be clear about that. That proclamation is the hallmark, the bedrock of our faith. This morning, we're going to confess our faith using the words of the Apostles' Creed, and we will say that we believe on the third day he rose again from the dead. Easter is all about resurrection. Mysterious, unexplained, Occam's razor defined resurrection. And that is quite a belief. And a lot of people have difficulty accepting it. I have a book in my church library. It's by a German scholar named Gerrit Ludemann. And the title of the book is What Really Happened to Jesus? And it's interesting, he doesn't have a question mark at the end. He's not asking, well, what really happened to Jesus? He's telling us what really happened to Jesus. And here's what he's telling us. Jesus was crucified, he died, he was buried, and his body rotted away, and he was not raised from the dead. And all those resurrection accounts, well, Dr. Ludeman, he explains them all away. The disciples hallucinated. They hallucinated. They just thought they saw Jesus raised from the dead, but he really wasn't. It's nice and simple. It ties everything up in a nice, neat bow. It's the end of discussion, end of argument, and in his mind, end of Easter. But if there's one thing I have learned in all my years as a person and as a Christian, is that there is nothing about Jesus or Easter that is nice and neat and simple. Easter is not tied up in a bow and easily dismissed. Since that very first Easter, nearly 2,000 years ago, since that very first day, the resurrection of Jesus has been messy, confusing, puzzling, and above all, thought-provoking. And that's what's at the heart of our gospel for today. That story from John 20, it takes place the evening of Easter. John says Jesus has been raised from the dead, but the disciples don't know it yet. Mary Magdalene has been to the tomb. She's seen Jesus, but they don't know that. Peter and the disciple, who's never named, but he's always called the disciple whom Jesus loved, they have run to the tomb in the morning, this disciple whom Jesus loved. He's even peered into the tomb, and we're told he believes, but we're not told what he believes. And that night, Jesus' disciples are gathered in a room. And here's what John tells us. And the doors of the house where the disciples had met were locked for fear of the Jews. Locked for fear of the Jews. Easter begins with fear. The disciples are afraid. They're afraid because Jesus was dead and all their hopes and their dreams, they had been crushed as Jesus' body was on that cross. They were afraid that what had happened to Jesus might also happen to them, that the leaders who had killed Jesus were now on the search for them, and that's why the doors are locked. They are afraid. Fear dominates the beginning of the Easter story. Everything that had been so uplifting, remember, this is just a week after Palm Sunday when Jesus was hailed as king. Everything had been destroyed in their mind. The women had gone to the tomb to welcome, they hadn't gone to the tomb that morning to welcome Jesus back to life. They'd gone to properly prepare his body for burial. In Luke's gospel, we're told that one of Jesus' disciples named Cleopas and a friend are leaving Jerusalem, and the reason they're leaving Jerusalem is, well, Jesus was dead. Why stick around? And then in all of its Occam's razor-defying mystery, Jesus is in the room with his disciples. Now, put yourself in their sandals for a moment when that happens to you. What would you possibly have been experiencing? Well, John's gospel gives us one of the great understatements in the history of literature when he says, "And the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord." Imagine what they felt when that moment occurred. And Jesus greets them with peace. He gives them the power of the Holy Spirit, which he promised to do just 4 days before. He gives them power and authority. And then, well, we don't know, because that's where this part of the story ends. Except for this. We're told that one of the disciples wasn't there. The one we so lovingly refer to as Doubting Thomas. We don't know where he is. We don't know why he's not with the rest of the disciples. The key point is he is not there. And then when he does show up, the other disciples bombard him with, "We have seen the Lord." And how does Thomas respond? Katie did a very nice job in her children's message. He responds with his best Occam's razor logic. There is no way on earth he's going to believe this crazy news. He says, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands, and put my finger in the mark of the nails in my hand in that spear wound in his side, I will not believe." The Greek is probably best translated this way: I will never, ever, 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 ever believe. And why? Well, because that's normal. Because dead people don't come back from the dead, not even if your friends say they saw him. There's one thing we know about Jesus' disciples, is that they, like many other Jews, they did believe in resurrection, but a general resurrection at the end of time. None of them had ever thought that one person would be raised at one particular moment before all of that. And Thomas was not alone in the doubts he had. The Gospels make it very clear through all the stories of the resurrection that Jesus' followers had trouble accepting the resurrection. In Matthew's Gospel, at the very end of the Gospel, Jesus appears to his disciples, and we are told that when they saw him, they worshiped him. But some doubted. Even when they see him, some doubt. In Mark's Gospel, the women run away from the tomb in terror and amazement, and they don't even tell anyone what they had seen. In Luke's Gospel, the women tell the disciples what they had seen, but the men don't believe them because these words seem to them to be an idle tale. Later on in Luke's Gospel, when Jesus actually appears again to his disciples, we're told, a wonderful phrase here, that while in their joy they were disbelieving, even though they're joyful, they're still going, I'm not so sure about this. And why did Jesus' disciples all act like this? Well, it's very simple. Occam's razor, because dead people are dead and they don't come back to life. But our Christian faith says otherwise. Our Christian faith declares that on Easter, God did something unprecedented. God did something unique. God did something that has never been done before or since. God raised Jesus of Nazareth from the dead, and in that logic-busting action, God has changed everything. That's what Thomas found out a week later when he was in the room with the disciples. And the doors are shut, but you notice there's a slight change. We're going to talk about this in the adult forum. It says the doors were shut, but it doesn't say anything about the doors being locked for fear, because something has changed. And then suddenly in the room, there is Jesus with them, and he looks at Thomas and says, "Okay, Thomas, here I am." And he holds out his hands, and he hopes his hole shows his side. And even though the gospel doesn't say it, I've always imagined Thomas must just sag to his knees as he gasps out these words, "My Lord and my God." Suddenly, everything has changed for good old Thomas. And then Jesus says these words that sum up faith. He says, "Thomas, have you believed because you see me? Well, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." That's the Easter gospel. So the question is now, my friends, do you believe it? Do you believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ? I think that's probably the single most important question we can ask ourselves. I know in my life it is. Can I believe this? Is it true? Did this really happen? And just so you know, your pastor has spent many a night in bed pondering this story, thinking about it, praying about it, going over it again and again and again and saying, "Can I buy this story?" And I'm very pleased to announce that my answer is yes. Yes, I do believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Not just because I'm a pastor and I have to believe in it. And not just because I went to college for 4 years and seminary for 4 years and I've been a pastor for 37 years. And if I'm wrong, I've wasted a lot of people's time, right? No, I believe it because I believe that if, after all my studying, my praying, my conversation, my discussing, my Occam's razor, trying to figure it out, I do believe this story is true. And I know it's a matter of belief, of faith. I know we can't prove the resurrection is true. It's always going to be a matter of faith. But I do believe. And there are a lot of reasons why I believe, and I just want to share a couple with you today. First reason why I believe in the resurrection is Jesus himself. Jesus was and still is something, a person like no other person in human history. He wasn't an ordinary religious leader. He wasn't an ordinary teacher. The Gospels show that his presence, his abilities, his power, his love, his concern for others, his understanding of God the Father, unique in the history of the world. I know of no other character in human history like Jesus of Nazareth. I mean, just think of it, 2,000 years later, he is still considered the most important person who has ever lived. The resurrection of Jesus is the capstone. It is God's definitive yes to Jesus that there is no one like him. Second reason why I believe is that the Easter story is just so unexpected. When you read the Gospels, nobody's ready for Easter. His disciples certainly weren't expecting it. It was probably the furthest thing from their mind that day. Survival and utter grief is what surrounded them. And then in that moment, everything changed. And that was the news of the resurrection. I love how the Gospels so honestly depict the disciples as being clueless and having trouble with this. It caught them completely off guard. We should not think of the disciples sitting in that room after Jesus has died having this conversation. Well, that didn't work out the way we hoped it would, but I think we need to come up with a plan B. I know. Let's go around and tell people that he was raised from the dead. Then we can keep things going. That should work. No, that's not what the disciples were doing. And as for Dr. Ludeman's hallucinations, well, you know what? The Apostle Paul tells us that there were 500 people who had seen Jesus at one time. If that's a hallucination, it's an awfully big hallucination. And when Paul wrote his letter we call 1 Corinthians, he said, most of them are still alive. You can go and talk to them and ask them what they experienced. I have another book in my library, which I like a lot better. It's called the Easter Gospels. And in this book, the author says this about Easter. He says, the Easter event was not one engendered by faith, but one that engendered faith. In plain English, it means this. Easter was not created by the faith of the disciples. Easter created faith in the disciples, where faith had not previously existed. It wasn't planned. It hit the disciples like a ton of bricks. But when it hit them, they realized that Jesus was alive. And a third reason why I believe the resurrection is true is courage. The courage of the disciples. Whatever it was they experienced on that Easter Sunday, it completely and totally transformed them. Think about Peter. On Good Friday morning, he is huddled in the courtyard of the high priest, swearing up and down to a teenage girl that he doesn't even know who Jesus is. And just a couple of weeks later, he is standing before the Jewish leaders who are telling him to shut up and not talk about Jesus, and he says these words, whether it is right in God's sight to listen to you rather than to God, you must judge. And then he says, for we cannot keep from speaking about what we have seen and heard. The disciples simply would not shut up about Jesus. Easter transformed them forever, and we must never forget that the reason you and I are here today is because of how the disciples were transformed on that first Easter. We can never forget that. Those disciples, they took the good news of Jesus Christ, and then they went out and they took on the world. They took on the world armed only with the good news of Jesus Christ, and the good news won. That is how brave and courageous those men and women so long ago were. And my friends, we live in a world that needs that kind of faith and courage. Too many people today, they wallow in fear and insecurity. Even with all the creature comforts we have today, even though we probably live in the safest time in human history, people are still paralyzed by fear. So many young people, so many children are consumed by fear and anxiety. So many people today still live empty, purposeless lives held hostage to fear. Fear about anything and everything. The world today continues to need the courage of Easter. Courage to stand up against hatred, violence, prejudice, and the uncertainties of the unknown. I am pleased to say that as a Christian, I do believe in the resurrection. And I love what another scholar said when he declared that Easter is God's majestic yes to the lowly way of Jesus. It is God's declaration that his love is greater than fear, anxiety, sin, hatred, it is greater even than the grave. Easter calls us out of our comfort zones. It calls us out of those places where we say, here's where I want to be, into the challenge that God gives us through Jesus Christ. Easter led Jesus' disciples from the locked room to the ends of the earth. And he calls you and he calls me to take that same step of faith. He calls us to step out of our comfort zones into the wonderful gift he has given us. I've shared before that the very first thing said to me in my very first class at seminary 41 years ago were these words. The professor said, the Lutheran Church was born in a university setting. God gave us brains, and God expects us to use them. When I say I believe, it's my thoughtful response, using all the brain power I hope God has given me, to say, yes, I do believe Jesus has been raised from the dead. I know my faith is not perfect. I know I have a long way to go. But God gives me, as he gives all of us, the ability to grow in faith, to dare in Jesus' name. Why? Well, all through Lent, we heard this verse, perfect love casts out fear. And Easter is all about casting out fear. So may we all seriously ponder our Easter story, and may we all declare, yes, I believe that Jesus has been raised. I believe it is true. So join with me. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Hallelujah.